if you talk to anybody around the National Hockey League, they would say he's going back to the Islanders. That's the default thing that they think. And yet, here we are. We're in the talking period. He's got an opportunity, and if something strikes his fancy, then he's got the ability to change gears. I don't think by any stretch he was locked into the Islanders.
Bob McKenzie of TSN with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt this morning. Welcome back. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690, along with Mitch Gallo and Dave Trentadue in for Rod Francis. All right, we're still waiting on the Tavares situation. The Sharks are talking to him. Who knows who's talking to him on the phone? Forget him. How about the other center? Thomas Plekanec coming back?
It's turtleneck time, baby.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. ShipEnergy.com.
I guess that was a yes. How are you, Pierre?
I'm good, Mitch. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm all right.
Didn't we talk about Plekanec yesterday?
No. Did we?
Well,
I don't remember.
I
yeah,
we
did
brought
we?
It up.
Yeah, we talked about Plekanec. Yeah. We talked about John Moore. We talked about a lot of stuff, but it's all a haze to me. You know, it's all kind of blending.
Okay.
It's all blending into each other. Thomas Plekanec. What did I say about Plekanec? What did you say?
You didn't react in a very favorable way.
I have nothing against Thomas Plekanec.
It's
the concept. It's the con. Here's my deal.
It's not the answer to the Canadiens' problem.
No, and not only that, it's even if you want to say that he's a coach's dream and you know what you're going to get and he's at the bottom six of the ladder, I would say the fourth line, if Phil Deneau is your third line center, he's not your second center, right, if he comes back?
No.
Okay.
No.
If it's slotted properly.
If he is, you're not winning a lot of games.
My problem is, you know, they have to make significant moves in order to even think about them seriously contending next season, right? There's and I'm willing to wait. I'm not passing judgment right now. Let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks. But unless those moves happen, I think they're going to be scratching and clawing to get into the playoffs, and maybe they're 2 years away or 3 years away. And if that's the case, then I question giving that ice time to a 36-year-old at the time as opposed to a young player who can develop at the NHL level. That's my
problem. I think
that's
a tremendous assessment. No, we agree. I think that's a really strong assessment and a positive one. We talked about this when things were going off the rails during the season, and I said the one thing that has to happen for this thing to be turned around is they've got to be super aggressive in the offseason, and they've got to be really creative. And we'll see. We'll see how they do. But again, I love what you're saying. It's too early to get down on them, but it's really going to be, this is going into the critical stage of the acquisition period. You know, I speak to a lot of different teams. I know how aggressive some of them are trying to be. And, one of them got super aggressive today by getting Connor Sheary and Matty Hunwick, the Buffalo Sabres. And you look at the price point that they paid for two character guys that are tremendously quick. They're really excited.
Yeah, it's
in Buffalo.
Yeah, and I want to get to Buffalo and Pittsburgh in a second, but what is going on right now with teams and who they've contacted and the agents? Take us behind the scenes here.
Great question again. I'll give you an example. There's one team that called me about James Van Riemsdyk today, and they said, if you were running a team, what would you be prepared to pay him? And I said, every single team is different. They all have different means, and they all have different salary cap situations. So you have to give me a specific. So he goes, well, use our team. And I said, if I were your team, I wouldn't give him more than 4 years, and I would not give him more than $5.5 million a year. That's what I said. And the GM says, that's what we're thinking, but I don't think that will be good enough to get the deal done. I said, probably not, but that's where you've got to be smart and realize where you are against the cap and where you are in terms of developing players through your system. And that's what he said. So it's fine to say, we want to sign that player for 6 years because we think he'll help us. The problem is, by year two of that six-year deal, you may have two or three other guys that come in a lot cheaper that are going to be better than that player or potentially better than that player. And that's where internal evaluation matters so much when you're playing in the cap era. And that's why these teams that go and blow their brains out on free agency day, a lot of times they get redundant. Now, on the Tavares thing, you can't make a mistake unless he gets decimated with an injury. You can't make a mistake because there's nobody in the league that's going to be better, very few people in the league that are going to be better than him. But there are other guys that are deeper on your roster. You've got to be so careful because of the developing players you have internally. I understand why Boston's courting John Tavares. I totally understand it because they see an aging center ice position with Patrice Bergeron, with David Krejci, and then not a lot behind that. David Backes is a third guy. So those are all aging guys. You understand what they're trying to do. They'll make one of those, obviously not Bergeron, but they'll make somebody else expendable if they get Tavares. That fits into their scheme. But a lot of these teams go and blow their brains out and bring in players in redundant situations, and it really causes problems.
So the front office staffs that are making the initial contact, and then, of course, a formal offer eventually comes in, how much intel is there in terms of, like, some of it is obvious. You know that the you're chasing the same player because of X team X, Y, and Z. They have the same issues as you. For the Canadiens, it's down the middle. But other than that, like, what are the discussions like in terms of formulating an offer, knowing that there are other teams targeting the same guy?
What happens if you think your team's legitimately a player away, and you think that player, let's say I think Melnyk is the one player I need to get. I'm going to pursue that player with a vengeance and make sure he knows we really think if you come here, we have a legitimate chance to win the cup. Or we really think if we add you and player B, we think we're winning the cup, and we already think we have player B. We need you. You're player A. Things like that. But that really matters. To getting the coach involved, what kind of system are you going to play? What kind of ice time is a player going to get? What are your power play schematics? If the guy's a specialist or a depth forward, here's where you fit on the penalty kill. Here's how many minutes per game. Here's who we think you have a chance to play with. Those kinds of things. That's where super pro-scouted teams that really understand the art of pro-scouting, they're able to sit down with these players and tell them, boom, boom, boom. Here's where you fit. Here's who we think you're going to play with. Here's why we think you're going to help our team. And you know, players are smart. Some guys may be able to ad-lib that and just BS you, but players know when they're being BS'd. So you better make sure you know the player, and you better know the player's strengths and weaknesses.
What would the Habs pitch to Paul Stastny be, for example?
You have a chance to come in and be our number one center. You have a chance to play with in an original six environment where you've never played before, in a province where your father and his brothers were phenomenal.
Actually, he was born, right? He was born in Quebec.
Yeah, he was born in Quebec City, but I don't think he remembers those days too well. He may remember a little bit of it. But, no, that's the kind of stuff you would tell him. And I think the biggest thing is you got a chance to come here and be our number one guy.
But Paul Stastny is your number one guy. Is he? Everybody has an ego. Everybody has an ego, but he's also a very smart guy, Paul Stastny.
But you're going to be 1A, 1B with Drouin. And that's what you got to tell him. You're not taking a step back to anybody. You're not going to be replaced by a guy that's only started playing center last year. You can't do that, because then he's going to start doing the math, and he says, well, if I fall back a little bit more, then, you know, Philip Deneau might pass me, or potentially their third overall pick might pass me in a year. So, you got to be careful with that, too, but that's why I would stress right away, you're going to be 1A, 1B. That's how it's going to be.
And the way I like looking at this, Pierre, and of course that would be the Canadiens' pitch to him, but what does Stastny respond? And if I'm Stastny, I say, okay, what are you guys doing with Pacioretty, and who are my wingers? Because in Winnipeg, I had Line A and Ehlers.
Right. That's where the next part of the problem comes in. We've talked about this for the last 2 years. This is a team that's devoid of young talent, and they don't have anybody like Nikolaj Ehlers. They don't have anybody like Patrick Line A. And there are a lot of teams in the league that don't have that too, by the way, to be fair to the Canadiens, but there are some that do. You know, let's use Boston as an example. Subtle example, okay? Subtle example. You could say to him, well, you're going to get Donato and DeBrusk. That's pretty good, because just ahead of you is going to be Pasternak and Marchand. You can sell that. You can sell that to a player. They're not stupid. They know the young guys that are coming up. And so, or you can say, well, if you don't like those, maybe Anders Bjork. You know, I mean, that's one of the things. Some of these teams, you do the same thing down in Tampa. You can do the same thing with Florida now. You could do the same thing with Columbus now. So that's part of the problem is you don't have a lot of young guys flushed through your organization right now.
So, well, you mentioned Tampa. How would the Lightning manage to have Tavares join them?
Well, I'm not going to speculate on the players or player that they'd have to trade away. And I've read a lot of things about one certain player in particular who's dealing with an injury situation right now, which I don't think is very fair to be writing his name in like that. So I'm not going to mention players' names on that. But I could see how they could definitely do a deal so that they could be comfortable with Tavares and with Stamkos and with Hedman. Being there, I could definitely see who the spare parts would be. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way about spare parts, but players that could be jettisoned to make room for him.
And JT Miller just signed yesterday. We didn't get a chance to talk to
you about that. Did he get a five-year deal, I think?
About 5.5 and a quarter a year, yeah.
Right, and that's and again, what I told this one general manager friend of mine, that's about where – that's 1 year more than I would have given Van Riemsdyk. But that's about where Miller's younger than he is. That's about where I thought Van Riemsdyk and he would fit, even though Van Riemsdyk's got far better numbers. I think JT Miller's just starting to trend up.
Give me the numbers again, the chat you had about Van Riemsdyk, what you would do.
I thought 4 years at around 5 to 5.5 million, closer to 6 million over the course of it, AV.
So now, on the surface, just as a fan, that sounds low. As a UFA.
I understand, but I'm telling you how this one team, that's why I had quantify everything
right,
for you.
Right.
This one team for cap projections and young players coming through their system, I said, I don't know if I would go higher than that if I were you, because in a year or two, you're going to have young guys pushing him out. And then what are you going to do? And then the GM totally agreed with me. See, not every team's the same. Not one size fits all. And that's how you have to look at these things. Some people may say, oh, man, they overpaid that guy. Well, that general manager may know, I don't have anybody coming at that position, and that's a critical position for me. So James's value in one city might be one thing, and in another city might be a whole other thing. It might be a whole other thing, and that's where you got to pay attention to.
If you were the Montreal Canadiens and you couldn't land Stastny, so let me go back to my question. How do you delicately negotiate with players that you want, but you have you have the rung of a ladder, right? Like you hope to get Stassi. He says no. You go to Bozak. How do you make offers not wanting both, but definitely wanting one of them?
That's wow. What a conundrum. I think you have to prioritize and you have to have interpersonal relationships with agents. Saying if we make this offer to you, if we make this offer to you, is this a done deal? And if the guy says no, then I think you got to move on and get the sure thing. When you're dealing with two like that, I mean, that becomes really difficult. That's the art of the deal. That's the art of negotiation.
Right.
And that's where relationships matter so much. There has to be a trustworthy relationship between the agent and the general manager or whomever's doing the negotiating for the team. That's a really dynamic question to ask. It's a hard one to answer, but that's how I would play it. I'd reverse back to personal skills or interpersonal skills with agents or relationships that I've had over time.
You know, it's like the situation with years ago when Bob Gainey was wooing all those free agents that offseason, and he had Kovalev, and he did make an offer.
Yeah.
He made an offer. It was a healthy offer, and Kovalev wanted more, and he went to Gionta, and that was that.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he probably knew. Well, that's an interesting one, the Gionta one. I don't know if you remember that one, but he tried to squeeze Lou, and not in a bad way. He went to Lou Lamoriello and said, I have this offer from Montreal. And Lou Lamoriello says, I'm driving you to the airport right now. And Gionta was almost taken aback. What do you mean? He goes, you cannot turn down that offer for your family. You've got to accept that offer. And that's how that played out. So, and I remember we talked about it at the time. Lou was not in any way, shape, or form going to match that offer. And he told Brian.
His old internal salary cap.
Correct. And I remember we talked about that, and I said, that's great. Brian Gionta is tremendous, and he and Gomez had a lot of magic in the 99 World Junior and early on with their time with the Devils, especially in 03 when they won the Cup. I get all that. That ship sailed a long time ago. And that's really where you could start to see it was starting to trend downward in Montreal. That's when you knew it was not going in the right direction.
Just had Ben Raby back home in Montreal. He was in studio.
Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah. We were just talking about Devontae Smith-Pelly. According to Pierre LeBrun, he has agreed to return on a one-year deal to Washington. The belief is that he turned down more lucrative offers from two other teams, wanted to stay with the Capitals, who are tight up against the salary cap. So
they are, and I still think, and I brought this up on Ottawa Radio, I think it was yesterday, I still think they have a healthy appetite to try to keep Jay Beagle in Washington. And I think if they're able to do that, that might make it hard for them to keep Michael Kempney on defense. So the way they would rely on everything would be through their internal depth down the middle with Kuznetsov back from Eller and then Beagle, if they're able to. But Devontae going back there, I'm so happy for him. Some of the best visits I had this spring with any player were with Devontae Smith-Pelly. I'm really, really happy for him.
All right, to the Penguins news, a little more in-depth. This follows them signing a couple of days ago Russ to a new contract for 4 years.
Yep.
Connor Sheary and Matt Hunwick to the Sabres for a fourth-round pick, could be a third. And there are unconfirmed reports, Pierre, out of Pittsburgh today.
And Jack Johnson?
That they're going to announce a five-year deal for Jack Johnson at about $16
million. I wouldn't be surprised. I know we've talked about that before. Jack's friendship with Sidney Crosby dates back to their time at Shattuck St. Mary's together.
Right.
They were on a team that was just a juggernaut. They're very dear friends. I know there was once a time when Ray Sherrill was a general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins that he tried to Jack Johnson to come to Pittsburgh because of the relationship that Sidney has with Jack. I think it's an amazingly tight and very respectful relationship. They were both taken in the same draft. Crosby went one, Jack Johnson went three. I could see that happening. In fact, I'd be really surprised if it didn't happen. I know you guys talked about him coming to Montreal. I never thought that was going to be the play. I never did.
No, and again, there's as you know, and it's a lot of people in the analytic community, but not just the analytic community. I mean, when I see Jack Johnson play, it's like something's missing.
Well, he's not the same player, Mitch.
I know, but even before the issues, with his parents, the unfortunate situation, there was just something. I don't know.
We're in agreement. I totally agree with you. And you asked me, I think, where did you think I thought he fit, and I said 5'6". That's where he is. I think he's a 5'6" on a decent team. So he'll go to a Pittsburgh team. Where now with Hunwick gone. See, part of, and Pittsburgh knows this as well, or I think they do a tremendous internal evaluation job with their team. They've depleted their defensive resources in order to acquire certain players. And if you look around the league, there are a lot of former Penguin players who either became free agents and moved along or retired or were traded away to try to get other players. And that's something that set them back a little bit. And they know that. They're trying to rebuild it on the fly. It's not going to be easy, but that's one of the reasons why you go out and get a player like Jack Johnson.
Mitch,
Sticking with the Penguins, I'm just curious, Pierre, Derek Brassard entering the final year of his deal. I know they just acquired him, and he slotted so well in Pittsburgh as their number three, but would he be capable of being a number two elsewhere?
There's a lot of rumor about him, and the only reason I'll talk about him because you brought it up, and there's a lot of rumor about him being traded away. I've fielded some calls about him from different teams, so I would not be surprised, you know, if he's definitely out there. I think a two on an elite team is a stretch for him. I think he's probably better suited to be a three. But again, remember, every team has a need for skill. And he can help on a power play. There's no question he can help you on a power play. So potentially maybe a weaker team would have him, but I would say on an elite team he's a three, and he's a top-end three on an elite team.
I wanted to ask you before we wrap this up, and I keep forgetting every day, there's some movement. I know it's not a sexy topic for a lot of hockey fans, but it's sometimes it's significant. Dan Bylsma joined Detroit as an assistant.
Right.
Jeff Halpern has just joined Tampa Bay staff, replacing Rick Bowness.
Yep.
And there was
a
report over the weekend that Mike Kitchen is on the final list to replace J.J. Daniel right here in Montreal.
That part I don't know. I don't know about Mike. I know Mike, there have been some other teams that have had interest in Mike that might be looking for coaches. The Rangers would be one, even though Bonus was in the conversation. There was rumor about them being interested. There were rumors about New Jersey. Major rumors about Washington being interested in Mike Kitchen. So that's not the only place for Mike. I think he'll be in play in a lot of different cities. Biles, I'm not surprised. He's a Michigan guy. He's really tight with Jeff Blashill. Very, very good friends with Jeff Blashill. And the biggest thing is Kenny Holland, I think, remembers his work from the 08 and 09 Cup years when he was a head coach in Pittsburgh. So it's a really good fit. I see it being a positive fit for them. And they need, I think they need a little bit more of an invigorating voice behind Jeff, and that's something Danny can do really well.